What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I am Joe McCormick, and we're back with the fifth and final part in our series on dust. This has really been an epic saga, taking it to five full parts in the series. We usually say that if you haven't heard the previous parts in the series, you should go back and listen to those first so you get the flow. But honestly, I think this series is a little bit less narrative in format than some of the other ones we've done. So if you start with this one, I don't think it makes a huge difference.
I mean, don't get too cocky. Don't do them in exact reverse order. I think that would be a little strange, but maybe you don't have to be as careful about it.
Right. So, but a very brief review. In part one, we talked about how to define dust. We talked about pyroglyphid dust mites, which live in our homes, in our furniture, and eating our sloughed off skin flakes. Delicious. We talked about the relationship between atmospheric dust and climate. In part two, we talked about dust bunnies, inner and outer, including dust bunnies in space. And we talked about how historical attitudes toward dust had changed over time, changing ideas in hygiene and things like that, affecting interior design in the 19th century. In part three, we talked about the role of dust in urban Victorian London and in the novel Dracula. And we also talked about the Sorites paradox, also known as the paradox of the heap, using dust accumulation as an example. And in part four, we talked mostly about select examples of dust having interesting significance in myths, rituals, and beliefs about magic and alchemy. And now we're back for more. So I think in the final episode of this series, we are going to focus primarily on dust storms.
That's right, into the dust storm.
So we've talked about how one of the defining features of dust is its tendency to fly, the tendency of dust particles to be borne aloft on the wind and float in the air for long periods of time. And for very small particles, this can be true even when air currents are fairly gentle. You know, it doesn't take more than like a fan in the house or somebody walking by to send some dust flying. However, if conditions are right, when winds become stronger, even particles larger than the normal flying dust threshold can be picked up and carried in the air, and this can result in dust storms, also known sometimes as sandstorms, also known in some instances as a haboob, which is a term that comes from Arabic and sort of refers to a particular type of dust storm. For some people, especially people in very arid climates, dust storms might just be a regular part of life, you know, a thing that you get used to, especially in certain seasons of the year. But if you're unfamiliar with them, or if you are experiencing a dust storm at the extremes of size and intensity, dust storms can be frightening, awe-inspiring natural events, churning up massive, surging clouds of dust and soil, so powerful I've seen them described as land-based tsunamis, that once they envelop you can blot out the sun and cause a kind of midnight at noon. Mm-hmm. And to illustrate what a dust storm at the extreme of intensity and the surprise factor can be like, I just wanted to mention a couple of descriptions of and facts about a particular dust storm that hit the Great Plains of the United States on April 14th, 1935. This is a day that came to be known as Black Sunday, named after the storm. And with historical perspective, this particular storm on April 14th came to be seen as part of a larger pattern of drought and dust storms in the prairies of the central United States that stretched throughout the 1930s and is known as the Dust Bowl. And dust storms were very frequent during the Dust Bowl. But the U.S. National Weather Service actually has a great information page on the Black Sunday storm, which collects some quotes from eyewitnesses and contemporary news reports, and they are fascinating and harrowing. So this storm was very large. It swept across multiple states through the middle of the United States, but it seems that the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma got the worst of the effects. The storm in this region sort of began in mid-afternoon around 4 p.m. and stretched on into the evening. And according to the National Weather Service summary, in some places winds reached 60 miles per hour, and in certain parts of the storm it was as dark as night or even darker. So I want to read a couple of these contemporary descriptions that have been collected here. One is from a newspaper called The Liberal News. This is from April 1935. I believe this is the newspaper of a town in Kansas called Liberal. That's the name of the town. It says, "A great black bank rolled in out of the northeast, and in a twinkling, when it struck Liberal, plunged everything into inky blackness, worse than that on any midnight, when there is at least some starlight and outlines of objects can be seen. When the storm struck, it was impossible to see one's hand before his face even 2 inches away, and it was several minutes before any trace of daylight whatsoever returned." Then I got another passage. This is written by someone named Pauline Winkler Gray, writing a piece called The Black Sunday of April 14th, 1935, for the Kansas Historical Society. This author writes, quote, "It was as though the sky was divided into two opposite worlds. On the south, there was blue sky, golden sunlight, and tranquility. On the north, there was a menacing curtain of boiling black dust that appeared to reach 1,000 or more feet into the air. It had the appearance of a mammoth waterfall in reverse, color as well as form. The apex of the cloud was plumed and curling, seething and tumbling over itself from north to south, and whipping trash, papers, sticks, and cardboard cartons before it. Even the birds were helpless in the turbulent onslaught and dipped and dived without the benefit of wings as the wind propelled them. As the wall of dust and sand struck our house, the sun was instantly blotted out completely. Gravel particles clattered against the windows and pounded down on the roof. The floor shook with the impact of the wind, and the rafters creaked threateningly. We stood in our living room in pitch blackness. We were stunned. Never had we been in such all-enveloping blackness before, such impenetrable gloom."
Oh, wow.
And another source I wanted to mention a couple of details from. This is the book that I brought up in part one of the podcast series. It's a book called Dust, The Modern World in a Trillion Particles by Jay Owens, published 2023. This book has a chapter which talks about dust storms, drought, and the Dust Bowl. And the author here relates an eyewitness telling by a woman named Ada Kearns talking to the Oklahoma Historical Society about Black Sunday many years later. And she claims that she's listening to the radio, and suddenly the radio announcer had to cut in and say, "We're going off the air," and gave no explanation why. So Owens writes about this, quote, "No time to say why. The storm carried so much static electricity that it was shorting out electrical equipment and car engines. Barbed wire fences visibly glowed with charge. The storm front rolled southward, picking up more dirt and power as it went. The sky filled with birds racing ahead. The ground ran with jackrabbits. The dust storm rolled along the horizon, inexorable and terrifying, a wall of oblivion.
Wow.
She also quotes multiple people who she kind of observes that there's like this trend of different people all saying they had the same thought when they saw the dust storm approaching, which is that they thought the world was ending, or at least in an expressive way said it was like the world was ending. In fact, JJ, if you want to pull in a little bit of media, apparently Woody Guthrie has a song that was possibly inspired by this event. The song is known as Dusty Old Dust or So Long It's Been Good to Know You and has some lyrics about dust storms. I'm going to say I love Woody Guthrie. This song, the vibes of it do not quite convey the terror and intensity of these quotes.
So long it's been good to know you. Dusty old dust is blowing me home.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at the lyrics to the song, I mean, yeah, there's talking about the sun being blocked out and people saying, so long, it's been good to know you. But yeah, maybe that's not completely conveyed in the overall tone of the song.
It's a friendly sounding melody.
Yeah.
So again, for some people around the world, people who live especially in desert regions or arid or semi-arid regions where dust storms are common, it might not seem as awe-inspiring, maybe in the same way that if you'd never seen a regular, you know, a thunderstorm with lightning and rain before, if you saw that, it would seem truly terrifying and awe-inspiring. So, we get used to the large-scale weather and natural phenomena that happen often in our surroundings. But if you are not used to the idea of a dust storm, as I certainly am not, it seems just an overwhelming experience. So Rob, I did attach a few photos we can look at that manage to, in various contexts, capture the dust wall boundary, like of an advancing dust storm. And it looks just shocking. You know, there's like, it's like, you know, mountainous dark clouds just pouring over the land.
Yeah, absolutely. I have relatives that live out in Arizona, and I've never been out there during a dust storm. I've, you know, been driving through Arizona or parts of New Mexico where they have the signs, beware dust storm, and even like instructions on what to do, namely like pull over, that sort of thing. But I'd asked them about it. You know, I asked my relatives there and it's, what was it like and so forth, and ended up looking up. If you just do an image search for dust storms AZ, you'll get some pretty tremendous looking images and some footage as well. And yeah, there's just a very apocalyptic appearance to these things, just a massive wall of dust rolling in, blotting out the sun, turning the world red or gray in the shadows. I'm glad I've not had the experience firsthand. I'm sure we have listeners out there who have been through these many times, and perhaps you can write in and share your experiences with us.
Please do.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Rob, I'm glad you mentioned the idea of pulling over if you're on the road and there's a dust storm, because it does seem, based on what I've read, that one of the biggest hazards actually of a dust storm is not so much that the storm is going to harm you directly, but it's the reduction in visibility and the way that it can affect like machines and electronics. So you don't want to be trying to fly or drive in the middle of a dust storm. That you can have collisions in an aircraft or a ground-based vehicle. It's just better to avoid it, obviously, if you're flying. But if you're in a car, stop. You don't want to be trying to weave your way through the darkness at noon.
Yeah, I believe the general advice, and do check your local signs. Don't just take my word for it here, but I believe you're supposed to turn off your engine, turn off your lights, put your vehicle in park and so forth. So yeah, the signs are very clear about this in areas where dust storms are a possibility.
However, this does raise interesting questions, because I certainly look at a dust storm and think, I've never seen anything like this firsthand. I would just be overwhelmed by it. But then I think, why is it that I've never seen anything like this firsthand? Why is it that they only occur in some regions and not in others? To some people, dust storms are a regular seasonal thing. You just get used to it. You prepare for it. You try to rely on weather prediction as far as that'll help you prepare for it. You can put tarps over things, and you can take measures to try to avoid getting in trouble in a dust storm. But for lots of people around the world, it's just a regular part of life. So why don't we get major dust storms around where we live? It has to do with climate. So this is going to raise general questions about how do dust storms work? What actually causes them, and where do they form? So I was looking at a number of sources on this question, and a really good one I came across is, what do you know, a good old How Stuff Works article by Vicky Giugio. Rob and I, if you're newer to the show, never heard us talk about this before, Rob and I used to work for How Stuff Works. You can still see the stuff in the title of the podcast there.
Yep. Still have some bylines on that website.
Well, anyway, I learned a lot of things about dust storms from this How Stuff Works article, so it's a pretty good one. So dust storms can occur anywhere where the conditions are right, but they are especially common in certain places around the world, places in arid regions of Central Africa, in Australia, in Central Asia, and arid parts of North America. And why is it in these locations in particular that dust storms are the most common? It's local climate conditions. As you might expect, dust storms are most likely in places where the topsoil is loose and dry. So places where the ground is wet or where the soil is firmly crusted together are going to release fewer particles into the air when the wind kicks up, so obviously less likely to create a dust storm. These conditions of dry, loose topsoil are most common in arid regions, especially after a period of drought. In fact, water helps protect the soil from erosion in multiple ways. It directly, physically helps bind the soil by getting it wet and making it compact, helping it clump together. But it also nourishes plant life. And the plants, in turn, help protect against soil erosion in many ways. So plants help bind soil and hold it in place with their roots. But plants can also serve as windbreaks, which slow down the wind that might blow away the topsoil. And they can also help prevent water from washing away soil when rain does fall. So dust storms are most common in deserts and semi-arid lands. You can think of dryness and drought as triggering a kind of vicious cycle of loss of plant life and subsequent soil erosion, and soil erosion can give rise to dust storms. The process by which fertile and semi-arid land is gradually degraded into full desert is known as desertification. And the How Stuff Works article here mentions one particularly notable case of relatively recent natural desertification, because there's some desertification that's caused by human land use practices, certain types of agriculture and stuff like that. But there's also natural desertification, just as, the climate of regions changes over time. And the natural example mentioned in this article is a place called the Badele Depression. So the Badele Depression is a sandy, dry basin at the southern edge of the Sahara Desert, centered in the northern half of the country of Chad. Today, it's a relatively low-lying desert region, but about 7,000 years ago, it was the location of a vast freshwater lake known to scientists as Lake Megachad. Lake Megachad covered more than 400,000 square kilometers, which is larger than all of the Great Lakes of North America put together.
That's a big lake.
That's a Megachad
lake. Yeah.
But as the climate of the Sahara region changed, the lake dried up and left behind the Badele Depression. And this region today is especially important as a source of atmospheric dust. A study by Ilan Koren and others in 2006 found that during the winter, 0.7 tons of dust from this dry lake bed alone is blown up into the atmosphere every single day. So I got a little bit interested in this, and I found a paper by Washington et al. Published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2009 called Dust as a Tipping Element, the Badele Depression, Chad. And this paper suggested that the Badele Depression, this one single area, is the source of about half of the mineral aerosols that come from the whole Sahara Desert. And these mineral aerosols and dust from the Sahara more generally are very important for spreading supplemental mineral nutrients to the Amazon region. You may have read or seen about this before, that there's a cross-oceanic current of dust through the atmosphere where this dust is lifted up off of the Sahara, goes across the desert, goes into the Caribbean basin, I think some goes into the Amazon, and the nutrients that are in this dust are very important for sustaining the Amazon rainforest.
Again, kind of getting back into some of what we talked about earlier in the series about the connection between dust and weather and climate.
Right. So why is so much dust coming off of this area? Well, apparently part of the reason is that there's sort of a wind gauntlet that feeds into it. I was reading a piece about this by the NASA Earth Observatory, which writes that, quote, mountain ranges to the northeast of the depression create a natural wind tunnel that focuses and strengthens winds as they rake across fast-moving sand dunes. So sort of a funnel for wind here, the wind gauntlet. It hits this massive dry lake bed. And what does it pick up? Well, here's another fascinating thing to consider. The dust picked up from the depression here is made in large part of fossilized life. Hmm. The sand in the former lake bed is made significantly of diatomite, also known as diatomaceous earth, which is a type of sedimentary rock, usually soft in texture and light or white in color. And diatomite is formed over time from the fossilized bodies of diatoms, which are single-celled organisms, usually classified as a type of algae, which live in the water and in the soil, then can sometimes gather together in colonies. And diatoms build protective cell walls or shells for themselves out of silica, silicon dioxide. And after they die, the remains of these silica shells form a layer of sediment that can later become exposed and then become sand or dust. So the silicon dioxide shells of these tiny algae organisms living in the water so long ago become the dust that is blown across the ocean that helps nourish the Amazon rainforest, but also is used in everything from gardening to home construction to whatever. I mean, diatomaceous earth is a commonly used material for all kinds of, you know, human industry. And it's just all the skeletons of these little dead life forms.
Tiny fossils.
L-A-S-I-K. LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X. and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
But anyway, back to dust storms. So dust storms often arise in these dry regions with less robust plant cover, especially after drought, when soil is vulnerable to wind erosion. When soil is very dry, it does not take a lot of force to lift dust particles into the air. According to the How Stuff Works article, a wind of about 9 miles per hour or 14.5 kilometers per hour will kick up some dust. But of course, as winds become stronger, the uplift and transportation of dust and soil through the air becomes more violent. And one important process to understand here is something called saltation. Saltation, as in related to like the word Spanish word saltar, meaning like to jump. So when wind blows across loose, dry soil, on the large scale, you will observe particles behaving differently based on their size. So very small dust particles can be picked up and become suspended in the air for long periods of time and can go very, very high up, as we talked about in part one. Small particles of dust can float for hours or even days, and a dust storm can loft these small particles into a cloud, reaching hundreds of meters or thousands of feet into the air. Larger particles can be blown across the surface of the ground, sort of rolling in a process known as creeping. That's the term. But there are medium-sized particles, these sort of sandy particles, that engage in saltation. And saltation, again, means jumping. So these medium particles get blown along the surface of the ground until they are briefly carried aloft by lift. Maybe they hit an uneven surface and jump up as they're blown along. And then they bounce back down and hit the ground. And this causes a chain reaction because they come back down and they hit the ground. And that impact can cause other particles of soil or sand or whatever in the ground to bounce, to be knocked out of place. And they jump and then hit other particles and on, kind of like splashing in the water. So when a heavy wind hits dry soil, there will be a cloud of fine dust blown in the air by the air currents, but also a bombardment of leaping medium-sized particles nearer to the ground.
You know, this reminds me, of course, of Frank Herbert's Dune, which I've been rereading. In the first part of the book, there's the scene where they take off in the ornithopter into the big sandstorm. And there's a discussion about, well, if you reach a certain altitude, it's going to be mostly dust as opposed to larger particles of sand at lower altitudes in this. Again, not a terrestrial vision of a sandstorm or dust storm, but something occurring on a large, predominantly desert planet.
Now, I'm half recalling a detail. Does Dune mention something about the dust raised up when a sandworm is plowing through the desert having showing like electrical discharge?
Well, you know, I don't remember from previous readings, and I haven't gotten to the part yet where the sandworms start appearing in earnest. But it's certainly something that the David Lynch adaptation picked up
yes.
on, adding those sparks. And if so, I mean, that would definitely be in line.
That's right, because we mentioned earlier the static electric properties, the static electric field generated in a dust storm just based on direct observations. But there's been scientific study of this too. And it turns out that the friction created by a dust storm, including the saltation process here, where these particles are hitting and rubbing against each other, creates a static electric field, which further aids in the uplift of dust and soil. Apparently, the ground becomes, in simplified terms, the ground becomes positively charged and the flying dust particles become negatively charged. And this electric field helps lift more particles off the ground and helps the flying particles in the air lift even more particles up. So it's not just the force of the wind, it's the static electricity within the dust storm that helps make it even more violent and lift more matter off of the ground into it.
I'll come in with a quick note that in Dune, there is mention of static electricity from sandstorms masking signals, messing with electrical equipment.
Ah, there you go. Thanks for doing the research.
This is the real-time research of me consulting the novel here.
One strange detail I read about for people during Dust Bowl times in the United States trying to counteract the static electricity within a dust storm was that they would put chains on the back of their cars. By the way, we're not advising driving inside a dust storm. You shouldn't do that. But chains on the back of the cars to ground the car so that so there'd be a connection to reduce the electrical potential.
Huh. Fascinating.
So dust storms can be created by really any source of strong winds, but a common source of strong winds here is in fact a thunderstorm, you know, like a cold front being pushed out by in advance of a thunderstorm. And there's a real cruel irony contained there in the fact that like a dust storm very often happens in a dry place that is badly in need of water. And it is these dry conditions that make the soil so vulnerable to being loosened and eroded and lifted into the air. And then this dust blizzard is brought at the advance of a thunderstorm. So often after certain types of dust storms, like after a haboob, it will rain. Sometimes it won't be a lot of rain, but rain can follow a dust storm. So it's like, looks like rain is coming, but at the edge of the storm, here comes a terrifying black wall of dust and sand, miles long and thousands of feet high.
Ooh.
However, to move on to a slightly different topic, Rob, I know you wanted to talk a bit about dust devils. And so we should establish a distinction between dust storms and dust devils. A dust storm is usually used to refer to like an advancing wall of dust driven by outflow of winds from a weather pattern or from a thunderstorm, while a dust devil is a smaller, more contained event, but can be very striking in its own right because a dust devil is a type of whirlwind.
That's right. Smaller in scale, very much localized. And there are several good resources out there about this. I noticed that we both ran across one of the same explainer articles on weather.gov. And this is based out of Flagstaff, I think, this particular article. But it is an NOAA explainer. And it points out that, yeah, a dust devil is basically a short-term dust-filled vortex ranging from 10 to 300 feet, average height of 500 to 1,000 feet. They typically last only a few minutes, though it is noted that in desert environments like those of northern Arizona, they can reach heights of several thousand feet and last for an hour or more. Wind speeds can reach 60 miles per hour or so. So you can think of them, they're kind of like tornadoes, except they're smaller, often much smaller. They can still provide a certain amount of destruction. They can still impact things, but not generally to the degree that you would associate with a full-scale tornado.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading some more about them in an article from Rob McCorkle, an article that this is on Texas Parks and Wildlife. This is a 2012 article that's mostly dealing with legend, lore, and legacy, titled Ghostly Little Twisters. I'll come back to some of the tidbits that he includes here, but he also sums up some more about the formation of dust devils. The ideal conditions, he said, are a clear day with sunny skies, light or no wind, cool atmospheric temperature, and a flat, barren terrain. And key here is a difference between near-surface air temperature and atmosphere. So as the NOAA article summarizes on this point, quote, if the temperature of the ground becomes much warmer than the air above it, vertical mixing will take place to release this unstable configuration. Once the ground heats up enough, a localized pocket of air will quickly rise through the cooler air above it. The sudden uprush of hot air causes the air to speed horizontally inward to the bottom of the newly forming vortex. So voila, you get this vortex of spinning dust because there's, you know, ample amounts of dust around in the sort of regions where these things tend to form. Again, these are generally not that long lasting, and they'll continue until this careful balance is broken. Generally speaking, that's once the warm, unstable air is depleted. And he points out these are mostly considered harmless, but there are documented cases where they have caused harm. There's some story about one hitting a bounce house, for example. So you know, they can get a little out of hand, but generally speaking, are not considered like a major risk. They're generally seen as more of a curiosity.
Is a bounce house, you mean that's the same thing as like a bouncy castle?
Yeah, yeah, like a bouncy castle scenario. I don't know the full story on that that bit, though.
Yikes.
But as one would imagine with any kind of phenomenon like this, it has factored into various folk tales and mythologies. And this is another area where there's probably much more than we can get into, but regions with dust storms and with dust devils, they have various supernatural ideas concerning such things. I already touched a little bit on Navajo traditions about different types of winds in the previous episode, but I found this one interesting concerning dust devils potentially in Celtic mythology. According to the Encyclopedia of Celtic Mythology and Folklore by Patricia Monaghan, this is from 2014, dust devils were connected to the idea of fairy blast or fairy wind, by which the fairy folk took things from our world. And you could dislodge something from the dust devil by throwing a shoe or some other object into it. But if you managed to take something out of it, if you knock something out of this dust devil that was not of human origin, but was of fairy origin, a magical item of some sort, like a superb musical instrument of fairy craftsmanship, well, then you only have it for a short amount of time because it will later turn to dust in your hands.
Oh, this reminds me of what we just talked about in the listener mail episode, the story from that 17th century sci-fi novel, The Man in the Moon, about the guy goes to outer space and the devils there give him food, but he later goes to eat the food and it has turned into goat hair and I think beast urine and some other thing, goat poop also. So you don't want to take items of value from those otherworldly beings. It's just not going to stay what it is.
Yeah. Now, it is interesting, though, because like Celtic tradition is not the first tradition I would think of when looking for dust devil traditions. But I just looked around and just a quick scan of various like news stories. I did run across one from not too long ago. Let's see if I'm having trouble finding a date on this, but just an AOL news story. Rare dust devil whips up a storm on Irish beach. And there's some some local footage that somebody just snagged on the beach of one of these dust devils. So you don't have to have a desert environment necessarily for one of these things to form. And then you don't have to ultimately have that many of them or have them occurring that frequently, of course, to enter into folkloric tradition. Now, Rob McCorkle in that article, Ghostly Little Twisters, points out a few other traditions from around the world. And basically, there are various takes on the idea of a dust devil as a supernatural entity of one form or another, a ghost or a spirit, some evidence of activity of the fairy folk, that sort of thing. And it may range from something rather harmless to something actively nefarious. So a few bits here. He writes, quote, "To the Navajo, dust devils are chindi, ghosts or spirits of the dead members of their tribe. Their tradition holds that a chindi spinning counterclockwise is a bad spirit, while one spinning clockwise is a good spirit." He also adds, quote, "In African folklore, a dust devil is a num, a shape-shifting demon or sorcerer occupying the body of a human host and drawn to suffering and self-destructive souls unconsciously seeking release from the pain of their lives." This, of course, you know, instantly brings to mind the Richard Stanley film Dust Devil, which is one we might have to come back around to on Weird Al Cinema. It's been a while since I've seen it, but it has one very memorable dust-related sequence in it.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Oh, yeah. It's a weird one, Richard Stanley.
Okay.
And and I believe is tying into some actual, I don't know to what degree they've been fictionalized and, you know, made to fit the needs of a horror film. But I think there's some usage of traditional, it's like South African traditions there. But anyway, that movie is not mentioned in the McCorkle article, but McCorkle does mention that there are Middle Eastern connections between dust devils and demons or djinn. And then also we see Aboriginal Australian traditions depicting the Willy Willy, a kind of nursery bogey that you would use to, you know, as with other bogeys and boogeymen, to frighten children, essentially, to tell them you need to behave otherwise, or, you know, be on the lookout because the Willy Willy in this case may come for you.
You know, it's really not hard for me to see, to look at various types of whirlwinds and imagine them as sentient beings because of the almost animal-like wandering nature of their movements.
Yeah, I mean, the same is true of tornadoes as well, or at least the smaller scale ones. I mean, tornadoes, especially in certain regions, can become so large that they are more on the scale of like dust storms. But yeah, whenever you have some sort of a weather phenomenon that you can sort of witness as a thing that is moving, you know, and it's, as opposed to something you are in the midst of entirely, we can't help but then anthropomorphize it and see it as kind of a being or an entity on some level. Mm-hmm. Like even if you know better, you know, you can't help but think of that that tornado as like a stalking entity out there in the sky.
You know, Rob, after the series, I truly am not going to look at dust in the same way when I'm just, you know, doing the everyday mundane chores, battling it inside my home. I feel like it has become potent.
You know, one thing I forgot to mention, we were talking about like observing dust in your home and also the interaction of small children. One thing I have noticed, of course, is in the past is, and okay, you have a dusty surface. You can ignore it a lot more easily if nobody has disturbed the dust, but once small hands have like played in the dust, then it's like, oh goodness, now I've got to dust this thing because the monotony is broken.
Yep. If you make one clean spot, now you got to clean the whole thing.
That's right. Oh, and real quick on the subject of dust in Dune and static charges in Dune, there's a whole bunch of static electricity in the novel Dune. And there's also mention of a static charge dust gun in the glossary at the end of the book that I'd forgotten about, a Baradi pistol, a static charge dust gun developed on Arrakis for laying down a large dye marker area on sand.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of static electricity on the mind for Frank Herbert as he was writing this.
Okay.
All right. We're going to go ahead and close the book on dust, but that doesn't mean you can't write into us with your own tidbits, experience, learnings about dust, dust in your world, dust in different cultures, dust in literature, and so forth. We're already getting some excellent listener mail on this count, and we will discuss these in future installments of Listener Mail, which publishes on Mondays in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. Our core science and culture episodes, those occur on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Wednesdays, we do a short form episode. And on Fridays, we set aside most serious concerns to just talk about a weird film on Weird House Cinema.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.